Mitchell is not our original speaker. The original speaker has one of the best stories for not being able to speak, which is she is welcoming a new baby. So Anna Herbrick is unable to join us, but in her stead, we have with us Ann Rolfes, and she is the founder of the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. Her work to combat oil pollution began in Nigeria in the mid-1990s. She returned to her home state to make the industry there more equitable. She has a master's degree in international development from Tulane University. And with that, let's please welcome Anne.
Hello. I'm the runner-up or the consolation prize or something. So thank y'all for coming instead of taking a nap or something else that would have been nice to do after lunch. So that's me, Anne Rolfes. And I'm very happy to be here. I'm going to start by telling you what the problem we address is, and you probably have some idea of it from your own work. But this is a map that shows you Louisiana's 17 oil refineries. And I don't mean for you to read every little word on this slide, just to get an idea of the fact that they're dispersed to an extent across the state and that we actually have a lot of them. We, in Louisiana, refine about 25% of the nation's oil. And here is a slide just telling you what some of the chemicals that come off of that refinery are. Sulfur dioxide, benzene, hydrogen sulfide. We have a delightful cornucopia of neurotoxins, respiratory irritants, and carcinogens. And this is our governor. I am showing him on the problem slide. But it's not just him, right? It could have been the Democratic governor before him or the governors that have been in our state for the last 25 years or so. This is our governor's picture in the LA Times this summer in July after there was a fatal explosion at a chemical plant. 7 workers were killed. And at the explosion, we don't have the chemical company speaking on their own behalf. We have the governor speaking on behalf of the chemical company, and his words were, "This is normal. The black smoke that you see behind you is what is supposed to be happening." So I give you this slide to say, as I think Dr. Whitehead may talk about in a moment, that this is actually a political problem, right? We all know that benzene is a carcinogen, that sulfur dioxide is really bad for the lungs. This is a failure of will. And so to the rescue, we have Percy Hollins and his bucket. So this is what I do with the Louisiana Bucket Brigade. I spend my time working with people who live right next to oil refineries and chemical plants and dumps, showing them how to take samples to document the problem that they live with. And we don't need 10 samples a day. We need a sample, 2 samples a month to show the problem, and then we just beat the drum consistently. We try not to get too tangled up in creating information because common sense says that benzene, exposure to benzene is not good. But what I am going to talk about is a new tool. So as you just saw, Mr. Hollins is one man with one bucket. But what could we do if we could get everybody a bucket? Or what could we do if we could give everybody some tool by which they could report the pollution that they're living with? As y'all probably know, when people call industry or when they call the government, they are not just ignored, but they're actually belittled, right? In Louisiana, they're made to feel as if they're stupid. The wind can't possibly be blowing toward you, or, oh no, we're not having any problem. You know, it must be your own garbage, right? So we have developed a tool called the Eyewitness Pollution Map. And what I'm not going to go into today is how we came about it or the platform. I am going to leave time for questions, so if you're interested in this technology, you can ask me about it then. So I'm obviously not a person very interested in technology because, look, this is my phone, okay? We want to use technology to the extent that it is powerful for people like Percy Hollins. And so you can have a phone like this, or you can have a landline, or you can have an iPhone, or you can do email, and you can still report to the Eyewitness Pollution Map. And so the pictures that you see on the screen are essentially the stream of events. You see a big flare next to your house, or maybe you don't even live there, maybe you're just passing through, and you then report it. And what happens is that red dots begin to appear on the map. And you can understand where the biggest problems are. Now, these dots will remain on the map for all time, but you could use it in a couple of different ways. You could try to understand, for example, in an explosion right now, if you saw 10 dots appear on one street corner, you would know that the problem is there at this moment in the worst way. Or you could use it over time, right? You could say, there are 200 reports in the last year from this one neighborhood. The problem over time has been worse there. And the idea, of course, in its perfect, not political form, is that that would actually drive government response to the rescue. However, our governor seems to be occupied being the spokesperson for industry. But that's okay, because I wanted to give you an idea of what some of the reports are. This says, a very strong petroleum smell in Mid-City, which is a neighborhood right now. I was outside for a matter of minutes and I started to get a headache. It's so strong I can smell it even with the door closed. And then the reporter gives us the wind direction. So you can see the red, the one in red is where this person was from, but all of the yellow shapes indicate reports during a particular problem. And then this is just how they look in another way on the map. It's a litany of reports, right? Nasty burning smell in Chalmette. I don't want to breathe. That's a problem. That's where there's an ExxonMobil refinery. Chemical odor. I noticed a chemical odor while sitting on my porch yesterday. I have gastric problems. Stinks like sulfur. You know, made my throat scratchy. And then this one says, my name is Irene. You know, there are sometimes some interesting details here. Smelled chemicals and had headaches. On this fourth report, you'll notice, I don't know if y'all can see it, but it says, my name is Irene, where she lives, and then a young lady gave me this number to call about the smell. So we show that to make the point that this number does not, it's not as if you have this map and then reports automatically start to appear, right? If we want to get reports to the map, then we have to go out and get them in a way. And the way that we do that is by sending people door to door. We started this after the BP disaster, not the Gulf oil spill, as I've heard it referred to at this conference. It's actually the BP disaster. It didn't just come from the bottom of the Gulf of Mexico. So we sent our emergency response team door to door, handing out what I gave to you, which are these postcards, right? And going through with people how they can report and telling them that they need to report what they see, smell, and hear, where they are, and where the wind is coming from. Because that wind information lets us know who the culprit might be. And we purposely have a reporting mechanism that will let people use their phones or, you know, on voicemail or text or whatever they're comfortable with. The number is a local area code 2727-OIL so that people can easily remember it. And we know that it is successful because the oil industry hates it. So the Louisiana Mid-Con and Oil and Gas Association says, you know, number of very basic questions. How can average citizens be eyewitnesses to so-called accidents inside a refining facility? They say that they're unfortunately beyond the scope of these reports. So this association, which is a collection of oil industry friends, you know, consistently blogs about how horrible this is, and they've gotten a local columnist to say how awful it is. And the way that they respond is that they say, you know, you couldn't possibly know what is happening in the refinery, right? And of course, our response is a pretty simple one. It is, well, you don't have to know why a fire started to call the fire department, right? I don't believe I have to understand why that flare happened to be able to report that it is in fact happening. And so we believe at this point that their response really works against them, because they're actually insulting everybody who responds to the eyewitness map, which is not very nice. So how do we use this? A really important part of this dynamic is that, you know, we don't want to go out and talk about this map and get it populated for our own purposes. Hang on, I just want to move forward here and see. Okay. Just a second. I seem to be missing a couple of things. All right. Well, one important point about the emergency response team is that, and I have numbers to show this, but there is a difference after our team goes out. So people at this point, we've had the eyewitness pollution map since 2010. People have heard about it on TV. They've seen it in the news, in the newspaper. You know, we advertise it a little bit on some websites, or, you know, put it on Facebook. So people may know about it. But when we go out and knock on doors, you see a threefold increase in reporting, right? So we will go out, for example, after an accident, like the one that killed a few workers, the governor is out there saying, you know, other than the people who were killed, there's no off-site impact. So we go and knock on doors and talk to people. We do health symptom surveys. People tell us they're having problems, and we say, okay, great. Would you please report this to the MAP? Because if they don't report it, right, it's as if there is no problem. Our governor gets away with saying there's no off-site impact. The industry gets away with saying there's no off-site impact. And this is actually, it's as if they have talking points after every accident. There is no off-site impact. So part of the reason that our map exists is to document these externalities that the industry and our government want to say don't exist. But it's not as if you just make a few postcards, right? I mean, I'm sure y'all know this. You don't just make them postcards and a map and then everybody reports to it, right? We have to get out in the neighborhoods. So we go to the neighborhoods and we see a threefold increase in reporting. And it's not, of course, as if you just can go to the neighborhood one time, right? So we try to visit neighborhoods once a quarter or so just to keep the number fresh in their mind. I think this is a really, really good point for this whole app craze, right? I mean, people not only love to make apps, but have you noticed that funders love to fund apps, right? I mean, I don't actually really get it, but okay, well, look, you can hold this against me. But, you know, this app stuff, it may work really well, but you have got to, in every case, have the on-the-ground organizing to go with it, right? And so we found that our emergency response teams are really very critical to getting this map used. But then the other point that I started to go into is, so why in the world should it matter? You know, are we just trying to get this populated because we, you know, for our own entertainment? No, right? It's got to actually come to something. So I show y'all this slide, which is a picture from an inspection conducted by the Environmental Protection Agency. And, you know, those additions are not actually my words. In fact, they're really better than anything I could say. The picture, the arrow, you can't even really see it in the inspection report, but you can see those red words that the EPA wrote, which is that the bottom half of the piping appears to have sloughed off, right? This is ExxonMobil, second largest refinery in the country. I think they make $40 billion year after year, but all these their pipes are falling apart. And then in the inspection itself, it wrote, a failure of the entire mechanical integrity program. We attribute, in part, the work of community reporting to this inspection, right? Because over time, over a couple of years, the neighbors kept calling. You know, they took air samples and they went to Washington, D.C. also. So it was certainly not in a vacuum. But they continued to populate the map so that there's a huge red dot on their neighborhood right next to ExxonMobil. Now, any guesses as to who the most frequent visitors to our map are? ExxonMobil, thank you, and our State Department of Environmental Quality, and the EPA and Bloomberg News, right? The point of this map is to make it very public, right? And also to get rid of gatekeepers. You know, nobody has to call me. Bloomberg News doesn't need to call me. They can go to that map and see somebody who's reported and then contact them, right? And so we want to create this sort of, you know, a million flowers, well, you know, red dots, about the chemical accidents that are happening, so that it will force things like this EPA inspection. And that part of it is very important, so that you have actually a loop, right? You have the map, you have us out in the neighborhoods telling people about it and explaining to people why we think it's useful. We don't know it, but we think it's useful. And then you have the EPA coming in, doing an inspection, busting the plant. This refinery manager actually was then moved off, Steve, to you in Virginia. And then, you know, I think that is then truly useful, right? Isn't that the point, that this, we see movement and we make this truly useful? So that's the map, right? There are some other outcomes, but this is one of them. One note about chemical emergencies. The reason that I think it's written up in the description that we call it chemical emergencies, and this is something that my colleague Anna, who's not here, really brought, is because when we called it environmental justice, or when we called it, you know, exposure, giving people cancer, in our state, you know, nobody's interested in that, right? However, we are concerned about things like, oh, Hurricane Katrina, or, you know, other bad things that happen from emergencies. So we felt like calling it an emergency stood us a better chance of getting a response than saying it was an environmental justice issue, which we still say, but we also call it a chemical emergency. And we have gotten a little bit better response. I leave with this slide, and she's Velma White from Shreveport, Louisiana. They are next to Calumet Refining. She runs a group called Residents for Air Neutralization. She and her team, she has a number of people, and they're environmental justice fellows, are out every day distributing these. They have a fair number of reports. They get people to report to eyewitnesspollution.org, which is the website, or calling or texting, however they want. And this is the point, right? Getting this tool in the hands of people who can use it. And I assure you, she doesn't call our regional EPA, right? She calls headquarters. And then the region calls Ms. White to complain that she called headquarters, right? You know, we're getting action. She's getting some relief in her community through this tool, and just because she's persistent. And that is the point. So if y'all have any questions, I'm happy to take them. But otherwise, thank you. And I look forward to hearing from these August panelists. Yes?
Is it something about air sampling?
Yeah. So the Bucket Brigade, really our core, in our name, is the bucket is an air sampling device. That was one of the early pictures. It's an easy to use, you know, $50 air sampling device that we send the sample to a lab and get results in 10 days. So it's a way for people to have some science and some documentation on their side. And the advantage of it is that a regular person can do it, you know, and nobody has to swoop in and take the sample for them.
We've got about 3 minutes for additional questions.
Yes.
So has the app that you just brought up?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. And just to be clear, and I know I probably was confusing by mentioning that three-letter word app, this actually is not an app. I mean, we have an app that goes with it, but it isn't an app. It's just, you know, you get on your phone and call or text. The Bucket Brigade uses a number of tools, right? Sampling in water, air, and soil is one tool. We used to actually have people write reports, you know, and put them in a neighborhood box. But now that we have this tool, we don't have to do that anymore. So, yeah, media is a very important tool. So, yeah, we continue to do the sampling.
And another question.
Yeah.
The environmental justice efforts are often difficult to find funders.
Yeah, absolutely. We are supported by no foundations in the state, right? We get money from individuals in the state, about, at this point, you know, probably $2,500 a month from individuals. We get money from the Norman Foundation, who just stopped funding us after 10 years, so that means they've got an opening on their docket, you know, get money from them. They're based in New York. Ben & Jerry's, Patagonia, the Compton Foundation, because we have an art component, a foundation called the Cornell Douglas Foundation, Wallace Genetic funding. And most of those, except for Compton, are, I would say, EJ. They fund up based on the organizing. Yes?
So when people make their reports, are they also calling 911?
Good point. That's a good point. If you look on the postcard, we tell them also to call the Louisiana State Police Hazmat Hotline. So after much agony, we decided on one official number to call, because they should log it in official channels, absolutely. And yet, the Coast Guard, who is currently a good working partner of ours, because they have a commander from California right now, who's a little more enlightened, he has his guy signing up to our map and has made our state sign up to our map for alerts.
We've got time
yeah.
for one more question.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about how you go about verifying
yes.
the reports that come in?
Yes.
The
Good point. So if you go and look on this map yourself, you'll see some say verified, some say not. Essentially, if we have three reports from a neighborhood, we say, okay, something's clearly go on, and we click the official verification button. Or if we only had one report but there was also a news story, we would click the official verification button as well. You know, the reports stay up there even if they're only one report, because there certainly is credence to that, right? I mean, what is the first step in the scientific process? It's observation. This map relies on that a lot. You know, so those still stand. We just give them the official verified stamp if there's more than one. But I don't want to say those others don't count. So thank you all very much.
All right, let's everyone thank Anne.